There's a time we were on holiday in Lake Bled, February 2005. We were living in Belgrade and it was half term and we drove up to Slovenia. Picture postcard lake surrounded by hills, small island at one end, large white church near the lake almost entirely frozen over, and we arrived in the middle of a snowstorm. We were staying in a spa hotel. The spa was on the ground floor with floor-to-ceiling windows that abutted right onto the lake and snow on the ice. And she stood in the warmth of the spa, breathing in that regulation essential oil aroma that all spas have. One looked out in this perfect, magical winter wonderland. It was like the distilled essence of a thousand Bing Crosby winter songs. There were quite a lot of German guests, and they were mostly walking around butt naked because they were German. On the other hand, there were some Americans who were mostly fully clothed. In fact, they were so troubled by naked Germans, they weren't just wearing their own clothes. They were also wearing the clothes the Germans had taken off. Us, being British, were stuck somewhere in the middle. There was a large pool in the central area of the spa, shallow steps leading down into the cool water. The boy and I were standing in the steps, chatting. At the time, he was 4 and a half. History doesn't recall why we were chatting, rather than just getting on with getting in the water, perhaps because it was freezing. We were standing a couple of yards apart, and walking towards us down the steps came this young German woman. She was attractive, topless, very good suntan. She must have been in sunbeds or holidaying elsewhere beforehand, and wearing a slight pair of white bikini bottoms which served to emphasise the depth of her tan. The boy looked at me, his face lit up like Scooby-Doo at the mention of snacks, and he started to point towards her. And not like a regular four-year-old, you know, like four-year-olds can point, they don't care, they'll just point at someone and say, "Why is that man fat?" Or, "Why does that woman have a moustache?" Or, "Why is that man shooting a watermelon with a Kalashnikov?" But he was cool and surreptitious, his hand held against his stomach, even though he looked like he'd just discovered the world's biggest chocolate bar. The lady was like 2 yards away, so I equally surreptitiously gave him a small head shake and a cutthroat, cut it out kid gesture. And with a snap of the fingers, he switched it off. His face went completely deadpan, and suddenly, as he tried to cover for his over-enthusiasm, he more or less turned into Cary Grant, and he said, "She's a lovely colour." We never knew if she noticed. She walked on by in between us and down into the pool. She was never seen again. She's likely out there somewhere in the world right now, unaware she's been talked about on the internet. My son, meanwhile, is now 21 and a half, because that's what happens. About 25 years ago, my wife said I ought to do a podcast. But you know, it was 1996 and they hadn't been invented yet. Sporadically throughout the last 25 years, she suggested I do a podcast. So finally, a few weeks ago, I took some pleasure announcing over breakfast one morning that I thought I should do a podcast, as though it was my idea. So this is the podcast. I'm not much good at just talking and like making things up, so my podcast will be me reading from my books, excerpts from novels and short stories. In the unlikely event that it makes you want to hear me read the entire book, then I'm afraid that's unlikely to happen. If you want to read the book, then it'll be available somewhere out there in the great beyond. We start here in week one in the Millport Barbershop, in a couple of scenes culled from this year's Scenes from the Barbershop Floor, Volume 2. Some Barney Thompson books have a plot, and some don't. This is one of the latter. It was just after 9 a.m. and a nothing kind of dull Friday morning in Millport in November. Low white cloud, the sea still, barely a wave to speak of. The men of the shop were standing at the window, their familiar position, looking out in the world. Keanu and Igor were eating pastries. Barney was reading a press release that arrived in the shop that morning, a regular occurrence among the detritus of the day, and they were all, as ever, drinking the finest Colombian coffee. "I like mornings like this," said Keanu, as usual the one to introduce unnecessary conversation to the mix. "Bleak. Still. That Eastern European movie vibe. You know nothing's going to happen all day. And it's fine. Nothing's supposed to happen." He was burbling, and it wasn't entirely clear whether either of the others were listening. "So what have you got there?" he asked, glancing over at Barney. "Not like you to give a press release more than 2 or 3 seconds. Barney took a sip of coffee, continuing to read the sheet of paper in his hand. Keanu couldn't see what it was, although the rear of it seemed to show a photograph of Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr in modern times walking the familiar crossing outside Abbey Road Studios. "The Beatles are back, and this time they're a shaving foam," said Barney. "That's what it says." Igor and Keanu looked at him, each with a quizzical eyebrow. Then they turned and stared back out at three seagulls sitting on the white promenade wall across the road. In a strange quirk of fate, one of those seagulls was also deaf and mute with a minor spinal deformity, though the gulls were not drinking coffee. "Really?" said Igor. Igor was mute, so in fact no words ever crossed his lips, and everything he tried to say emerged as the word "arf." Nevertheless, in a way that transcended logic and reason, but not the boundaries of fiction, Barney and Keanu could understand everything he said. Barney turned the page towards him so he could see the title of the press release was indeed as he'd read. "Go on," said Keanu, "read it out." "Sure," said Barney. "Gillette, through their new ecologically sound subsidiary, Ecoman, are delighted to enter into collaboration with Sir Paul McCartney and Sir Richard Starkey to produce the all-new Beatles range of men's hygiene products. The line will launch in January with Ecoman Beatles Shaving Foam, a worldwide campaign on While My Skin Guard Sensitive Shaving Foam Gently Weeps, which will be the first new Beatles single since Real Love in 1996. Da-da-da, stuff about how amazing the Beatles were. Sir Paul is losing his shit over how great this will be for the planet. Ringo himself hasn't shaved since 1967, but some of his best friends shave. Da-da-da, the new single's based on a tune George left in the freezer so that Olivia hears it every time she has ice cream. All new Beatles shaving foam will come in four varieties. Spice, because of George's affection for India. Cinnamon, because Paul is fluffy and warm. Unicorn, whatever that is, to match Ringo's sense of fun. And lemon, because John was caustic and bitter. Igor sniggered. "You're making that up," said Keanu, and he held his hand out for Barney to give him the press release. Keanu nodded as he read it, then he handed it to Igor, who instantly scrunched it up, threw it over his shoulder and landed it squarely in the middle of the bin. "You're not making it up," said Keanu. "Wow, and I see Sir Paul and Sir Ringo are doing in-shop appearances to promote the product. Will we get them in?" "I thought we'd bid for John's ghost or perhaps the George hologram. Might be a bit weird having an actual living ex-Beatle in the shop." "Not ex-Beatle," said Barney, indicating the binned press release. "Current Beatle. They got back together." "Arf, indeed," said Barney, taking a drink of coffee. "If those two don't get the Beatles back together, no one else will." Unusually, both Barney and Keanu were cutting hair while Igor diligently swept the floor at the rear of the shop. Mid-morning, the first two customers of the day arriving at the same time. Thumper Aykroyd, in for his monthly Berlin Duck Schadenfreude Curly Quiff, and Tony Six Ears, another regular, in for the edgy aesthetic of a Fukuyama faux hawk. Both customers had lifted a newspaper off the small, usually undisturbed pile on the bench, and the haircuts were progressing in silence, accompanied by the quiet click of scissors, the occasional buzz of the clippers, the old-fashioned rustle of newspaper pages, and the monotonous yet comforting sweep of Igor's brush. Aykroyd had fallen asleep reading the Telegraph, this headline, "Johnson's near invisibility as PM adds to mysterious aura of omnipotence," while Six Ears was reading the Scotsman, this headline, "Sturgeon urged to retake Berwick while no one's looking." "God's sake," muttered Six Ears, and Barney had to pause for a moment while Six Ears shook his head. Aykroyd stirred in his sleep, but didn't fully wake up. Barney waited until the head movement was finished, then began cutting once more. Keanu glanced over, a familiar smile on his lips, waiting to see if Barney was going to take 6 years up on his offer of conversation. Unsurprised, he had no intention of doing so. "Help my bob," grumbled 6 years. "The mince you read in these papers." "What's that, Mr. Ears?" asked Keanu, and Barney gave him a low-key side eye. "See when I'm king," said 6 years, despite, frankly, not even currently being in the top 329,000 in the line of succession, so the chances were slim. "See when I'm king. First thing I ban is the term wild swimming. I mean, that there, see those two words? They're literally everything that's messed up about life." Barney continued to cut hair, imagining that at that very moment, if Paul McCartney was standing in the corner singing "I Want to Shave Your Beard" or "Strawberry Foam Forever," it might be awkward, but at least he wouldn't have to listen to 6 years talk about wild swimming. "Soph's and I often nip round Fintry Bay," said Keanu. "Pretty deep, pretty quickly, by the way, so you've got to not let your imagination run away with you. Who knows what kind of leviathans lurk in the deep, dark canyons of the Clyde, eh?" 6 years slung Keanu an annoyed look, then glanced at Barney, who'd once again paused the cut, before settling back in position. "It's just swimming, though, isn't it?" said 6 years. "Swimming. When I was a wane, I went swimming. That was it. The first time you hear the term wild swimming, you're like, holy crap, that sounds brilliant. I want to go wild swimming. Wild swimming sounds like you're going to be, I don't know, swimming with bears, or swimming through an Icelandic waterfall as you plummet 1,000 feet through the air fighting a dragon. Turns out it's just swimming, like you used to do when you were away. You saw a bit of water, you said, Mum, can I go swimming? And she said, aye, all right, but be careful. Try not to get wet. And that was it. Now there's articles and shows and radio programmes and books with instructions. How you go wild swimming? Really? Tear your kit off and jump in the water, for goodness sake. He looked angrily at Barney as though everything that was wrong with society was Barney's fault. Barney, however, had seen much in the world. He'd lived lives. He'd collected knowledge and wisdom of Gandalf and Elrond, Dumbledore and Alex Ferguson. Looking harshly at Barney was like staring into the total perspective vortex. 6 years shuddered, then turned back to Keanu, Barney patiently waiting his moment to resume the cut. And see the dry suits and wet suits and whatever. Seriously, just get in the water. See, when I was away and you'd swim out there in the middle of January if your mum let you. A wee pair of trunks and off you go. No one gave a stuff. Nowadays all these precious little Muppets called Hugo and Abigail and Tyler and Chardonnay, they've all got their swimming gear. Everything's got a name. Everything's got equipment. Everything's packaged and sold and squeezed into a perfect little marketing bubble. I'm like that. He shook his head, continuing to stare harshly at Keanu, who wasn't really giving him anything in return. Then 6 years glanced quickly at Barney, accepted he wasn't getting anywhere and settled back down into the cut, thinking, like everyone else in the shop, that the quicker they get it over with, the better. Barney resumed the cut, determining that he could get 6 years up and out within 3 or 4 minutes. Igor chuckled quietly to himself and resumed sweeping, which no one had really noticed he'd stopped, and Keanu too returned to his cut. Keanu left it a moment, another, 1 second to the next, and then with perfect timing said quietly, I quite like wild swimming. Anything interesting happened in Millport today? Asked Keanu. End of the day, another one biting the dust. Another Friday in the bag. Another week near the end of the great pandemic of 2020. The precursor to the even greater pandemic of 2021, both of which would be dwarfed by the forthcoming mother of all pandemics of 2022 and 2023's last great pandemic on Earth. The men of the shop had been joined by Detective Sergeant Monk, who'd come in for the day's wrap-up cup of tea. It was now dark outside and there was nothing to see from the windows bar the reflection of the shop. Little had changed. Igor and Keanu unmoving, the clock on the wall reluctant to click from 1 second to the next. Bar the first couple of customers of the day, none had bothered to place their hand into the septic tank of the newspaper pile, and all that human waste went unscooped. The males, I spit in your grave, crows Rab as he steps over cold corpse of overworked civil servant. The Times's Trump machine guns cheering MAGA crowd gains power from drinking victims' blood. The Sun's Earth breathes sigh of relief as all humans due to die of either COVID or stupidity by summer 2022. The Eye's Love Island babe wakes from COVID coma with new boobs, speaking pure maths. The Guardian's Patel takes to killing immigrants with bare hands at Dover arrivals. And the Star's Emmerdale hunk shagged my mum, then killed her and wore her skin to Asda, claims upset laws, laying a neat and undisturbed pile. Hmm, said Monk. And the men each gave an interested eyebrow. There'd been a lot going on in that single syllable. Ooh, said Keanu. That sounds promising. Did you break up a diamond smuggling operation or get into a helicopter chase and shoot out with Colombian drug barons? Not today. Okay, cool. Go on. Barney and Igor drank their tea, a little more grounded in their expectations. Well, it turns out old man Limburger still has the handgun from his national service days just after the war. A Browning. Never registered it, of course, because these people never did. Anyway, no one's getting up in the grill of these old guys, because invariably those weapons are going to be kept in a shoebox in the loft, and the existence will only be discovered when they die, except old man Limburger is a conspiracy theorist. Tell us about it, said Barney ruefully. Ah, said Monk, you get to hear that, do you? He's in here every couple of weeks, and he's in them all. Moon landing, JFK, COVID is a Chinese world domination tool, alternatively, a world is run by giant lizards. Good to know, said Monk. So Mr. Limburger keeps his old gun polished, armed, ready to go, you know, in case the Russians invade, or the French, or in fact, in case Constable Gainsborough and I decide to stage a takeover of the island. But he hasn't killed someone, has he? Asked Barney, seeing where this was going. It's weirder than that. So no one's dead? No one's dead. Okay, good, said Barney. I'll relax and enjoy it. What's the weirdness? Monk took a drink of tea, the storyteller's narrative pause, nodded to Igor at its quality, and then continued. Today he was sitting out at the front of his house, you know, at the back of Kames, and he was cleaning the gun. Looks like he does that a lot. I've seen him, said Barney. Didn't realise he was cleaning a gun. Me neither, said Monk. Anyway, he accidentally discharged the weapon. Arf, like I said, no one died. Here's where it gets weird. The only reason we got to hear about it, as no one in the area reported hearing a gunshot, was because young Billy Theroux. Top-down pompadour undercut, said Keanu. That's what you call it, is it? Gave it to him 3 days ago. So, young Billy's out for a walk. He's got his walking boots on, he's been a bit wet recently, and he's aiming to go round the bay and up the hill behind our place, and as we know, it's pretty muddy scrambling up that hill at the moment. He's long laces in his boots. Every time he goes out, he double knots them. Says he did it before he went out, same as always, nice and tight, old laces, once they're tied, they stay tied. He's walking along, something catches his eye, he sees the second knot has come loose in the left boot. That's odd, he thinks. He bends down to tie it and, boom, gunshot. He feels the bullet whiz past the top of his head, misses him by who knows how little, and disappears into the trees. Keanu let out a long whistle. Igor looks suspicious. Unluckily, said Barney wearily, as they say in Thomas the Tank Engine, no one got hurt. Yep, that's the size of it. Young Billy, of course, is seeing a higher power at work. Oh, he hasn't found Jesus, has he? Seems to be leaning more towards Slarty Bart first. Meanwhile, old man Limburger is seeing some kind of grand conspiracy where young Billy is in league with this higher power, and that's what saved his life. Nevertheless, given he nearly accidentally killed the kid, he has to accept that no one really cares what he thinks. Take his gun off him? Oh, aye. He wasn't happy, but you know. Story dispatched, took another drink of tea, nodded to herself again, accepted that she'd imparted all the details she needed to, and then settled back. How's that for Millport today, really? Weird, said Keanu, as you said. Yep. Maybe it was a metaphor. For what? No one knows. I mean, it's a slightly surreal tale in the way you get in fiction, but not in real life. So maybe if you bring a literary scholar into the investigation, they might be able to help you. It's not an investigation. Well, if you don't want to find out what really happened. He smiled. She shared it. Then together they drank the tea. And it wasn't just a thing, but they were all more or less finishing at the same time. Right on cue to be ready to close up, leave the shop, and head home. Tell me something, boss, said Keanu, throwing a last-minute conversational spanner in the works. Mm-hmm. Isn't it weird that even though you've never had children, you can quote Thomas the Tank Engine? How did that happen? Barney smiled. Igor sniggered to himself. Monk looked expectantly at Barney. Good spot, she said. He quoted Winnie the Pooh at me last week. That's because I don't write my own lines, said Barney. The woman who doesn't must have kids. It's pretty straightforward, really. Your lines are written by a woman. Possibly. We'll never know. Kind of feel like you'd say more if you were written by a woman, said Keanu. Barney smiled. Monk threw a silent bugger off across the shop. Anyway, said Monk, maybe you could get this woman to write you a few more lines. We'd all appreciate it. I'll speak to her, said Barney. See what we can work out. And that, ladies and gentlemen, was all she wrote.